So, hey, how you doing?
Hey, doing pretty good, Jersey.
Where you been and how you been?
You feeling better?
Let me just ask this. Are you feeling better? Have you had a full week since you finished that godforsaken game that ate up your whole life for the last 8 months? How's it feel to be human?
You know, I have one topic I've considered talking about lately is addiction to challenge. Because actually, time off often gets me itchy. I think of things I want to improve with the recent projects, and also if recent projects are far enough along where they're essentially, you know, really published and really done, then I start trying to think of the next thing.
Do you ever get that kind of decompression of, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do next? Or is that not a problem because you have so many challenges to take on? Because, I mean, I'll tell you, whenever I finish a big project, I go through like a full day of being freaked out over what I have to do next. Not freaked out as in like, oh, there's too much to do, but freaked out like I don't know which one to start next.
That is precisely the flavor of the disease I have.
I think I saw a commercial for something that'll take care of that, but side effects include.
side effects include wistful sadness and exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And teary eyed yearning.
Thoughts of the color blue. Restless sitting down syndrome. Yeah, all sorts of strange things come along with this, but it will cure you of that. Anyway, hi, I'm Jersey Drozd, but you guys knew that. Anybody who downloaded the show on purpose knows who I am, and they know who the guy across the room from me or across the Skypes from me, they know that's Rob Stenzinger.
Maybe.
Interactive-storyteller.com.
Thank you for the introduction for both of us, Jersey. You never know. Every episode is someone's first.
That's true. So anyway, yes, for the new listener, yeah, you just finished many, many months work on a workshop that you're going to lead at Kids Read Comics, kidsreadcomics.org. You can look it up later, folks. Playing a game to learn how to make a game. I did the test run with you. Oh my gosh, it's so, so good. And I'm bummed out that I don't think I'm going to get to participate in it. Let me look at the programming schedule now. Oh no. Oh no, no, no. But I think I'm engaged with something else during that time when you're doing it. But I added you to Sunday, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I don't even know what's going on in my life anymore. It's still such a blur. So let's see. Your workshop will be, gosh, where are you?
Saturday at 4 p.m. and Sunday at 1?
That's right. So I might be able to attend one of them.
Cool.
Sunday at 1, yes.
Yep. And that's Underwater Tomato Ninja.
Your interactive workshop to learn how to actually make a game in HTML5. So exciting.
Cool. Thanks. I actually tested it on some unsuspecting relatives this weekend, too.
How'd it go?
It went well. It was funny. It's, let's see. There was a lot of other events going on. And I was making sure I was tuned in to say, well, are you really sure you want to, you know, you're curious about this? Kind of thing. So we did an abbreviated version and it went really well.
Cool.
And yeah.
They were happy. They weren't like, yep. Oh, coding, whatever.
A teenager and a preteen. So.
Oh, awesome.
It went pretty good. Let's see. Yeah, no, I think it went really well. Actually, the teenager had some really kind words and said, hey, have you ever thought of visiting classrooms? Because hey, there's one time in my history class when they had a war veteran come in and he talked about his experiences during this one unit, and I thought, well, hey, you know, would you want to do that kind of thing? And of course,
school visits.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Is there a school visits tab on your website at interactive-storyteller.com? No. Another no. challenge for you to take on. Be.
No. Yep, exactly. Always something to work on. Exactly. You know, that it's I am trying to enjoy let's see. I was looking back at the Lean Into Art archive, right? We had the one called Me Party.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Was that, I think it was episode 7?
Good memory. Maybe?
It's a pretty old one. Well, I right. I'm working on migrating the podcast to a different hosting setup. So, yep, I can remember stuff 5-10 minutes.
But yes, we did an episode. Future. We did an episode on the importance of a celebration following the completion of a big project and what psychological benefits come out of that. Even if you're not a very social person, having some kind of celebratory event to mark the passage of the big thing. And yeah, you need a me party after finishing that. Well, I got one for you. It's called Ann Arbor, Michigan, kidsreadcomics.org.
Exactly. That's the real thing. So that's the real debut of the class. And so I've already resumed tweaking it and whatnot. So anyway, it's ready to go, but of course it always could be just a little more ready. And cool. And you know what? My party is going to be beating your score in Golden Axe 2.
Oh, how about that? I will take that challenge. I've been training Anne in Golden Axe. So,
oh my.
Yep. It is a 4-player game. So she plays the centaur. I always play the giant with the little dwarf on his back.
Sure. Master Blaster.
Is that what his name is?
No. Master Blaster. That's the character from Mad Max.
Oh, yeah. No. I don't remember what his name is in the Golden Axe game. Somebody will email us. But anyway, Golden Axe 2 at Pinball Pete's. I'll meet you there, and it'll be...
truly a magical place.
It's going to be like the end of Karate Kid. It's going to be a very intense tournament. And then Rob will get mad, and he'll sweep the leg. And
yep. Which means unplug the game.
It wouldn't be Lean Into Art without a Karate Kid reference. So, okay, we're 7 minutes in, so we should probably get into talking about what we're going to talk about today, what our discussion, our scheduled discussion is. And I'm not even going to bother trying to find a clumsy segue into this. You pitched this at me today. You texted me and you threw this at me, and I said, that is interesting because it's something I haven't thought about in a long time, which means that as I've been saying the last couple episodes, I'm really enjoying this idea of returning to a learner's state. As a matter of fact, before we actually dive into the topic, I got another tangentially related topic. I just found out, thanks to Anne, that the University of Michigan is offering a whole bunch of free online courses taught by their professors. And there's a, what am I looking at here? Fantasy and Science Fiction, The Human Mind, Our Modern World, a humanities course in science fiction.
Nice.
Yeah, totally free. I'm totally going to take this class. But this idea of getting out of my comfort zone and getting back into this role of being an excited learner again, which let's go back to episode 1 of the show where good teachers are good students, right? So when you pitched this topic at me, you said something about, all you said was role models in this huge list of potential topics. And I love that. I love the fact that you could just like throw a phrase at me and I go, gosh, what do I think about that? You know, and then I just jotted down some notes that I didn't know if they're any good. And we'll see if they're any good.
Yeah, and that's the whole process. I mean, you come up with a theory and or some kind of model, and then you test it. Is the model accurate? What's does it seem to provide some useful means to process this subject, right?
And I don't think I've ever had this discussion before. I think in all the years I've been doing this audio stuff, I don't think we've ever talked about personal role models and what that means. So exciting to me. Totally outside of my comfort zone. Thank you, Rob. I always count on you to do that.
And and right back at you, Jersey.
So where did this come from? Why did you bring this up?
Well, I would say from a few different angles. Sometimes I notice a meme going around that has to do with artists' influences, right? And it's like an influence template that I've seen float around where essentially people will put in visual references from people that they admire. They're typically it's a visual art style example of a role model essentially. Mm-hmm. And I know the role model it's a bigger word than that, but that's one of the things that reminds me when you call back to, well, where's my source for thinking this idea? Where did I run into this idea first? And that could be a technique or a genre of art, or it could be an attitude or an interesting thought that you just keep chewing on. You can't stop chewing on it.
A sense of energy, a sense of ethos, a general spirit of something.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is when you're first gripped by it, you don't know what it is about the thing. Let me just speak for my own. I'm going to only speak for myself, everybody. I'm not going to talk about you guys because I don't know you guys. But for me, when I would get gripped by something like that, I didn't know what it was about it. I just knew that, right? Mm-hmm. That's the thing. That whatever that guy did, I love it, and I want my stuff to feel like that. Maybe I don't want to copy it wholesale, although that's often how it starts. But I want my work to exude. I want that work to do for other people what this particular work did for me, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's one of the. Let's see. A lot of times. I get interested in picking up or learning something because I see someone being so effective at using that idea. Or, you watch The Karate Kid and you think, well, gosh, I want to go learn martial arts.
Yeah.
And, skateboarding videos or seeing, oh, gosh, I suppose.
Well, let's talk about... oh my gosh, what's that movie? Or the book's called Hunger Games. And, all the news stories are talking about all these girls who want to learn archery now because of Katniss, mm-hmm. what's her name, in the books. The Avengers has Hawkeye in it. And so there's all this interest in archery all of a sudden, which some people go, oh, lame archery. Everybody's just cashing in on a fad. Well, or you could look at it as people are just excited about something that they weren't previously exposed to. And there's something about these books that have just enraptured these young people, and they want to explore whatever it was that enraptured them about that thing. And if it means taking archery lessons, cool, good for them. Maybe some of them will learn to love archery. Maybe some of them will just learn to pick up a few skills, right?
Exactly. I mean, I know that, I'm not sure for how many decades guitar has been popular. But I would say during the 80s that it was, honestly, picking up a guitar had such a, not that anyone who picked it up would instantly be imbued with skill, but embark on a quest to obtain certain heavily worshiped skills. And I know that it's divisive to say this. It's not everyone who saw a virtuoso guitarist like Yngwie Malmsteen would have the same reaction, right?
Right.
Some would say, oh no, that sucks. I mean, you don't have the same spirit as someone just, cranking on it. Like, I'm embarrassed that I have no example offhand, but
like some kind of like crunchy heavy metal kind of stuff, or some kind of like, kind of really, really rough around the edges punk. Or something like that, right?
Exactly, and that's what I was reaching for as an example. But yeah, I mean, frankly, I just don't know a lot of punk guitarists. I mean, listen to a lot of their music, and for instance, Dirty Rotten Imbeciles. That's a band I like, and one of their songs, Suit and Tie Guy, was one of the first ones I learned in a cover band, right? And I certainly had high esteem for their guitarist, even though I didn't memorize his name. But at the same time, a lot of it was common to have, there was the era of Eddie Van Halen. And,
oh, yeah, yeah. Gosh, how many friends did I have who tried to learn finger tapping because of what he could do, right?
Exactly. And so it could be, it's an example of the media having a really popular example of something that can take a lot of skill and study to achieve. Mm-hmm. And have
music's a good example of that too, because it's so easily demonstrable of the hours and hours of skill. There's a performance. Mm. There's me, and I'm going to do this thing for 3 minutes, and you're going to see all of my years of study distilled into this 3 minute moment. Whereas with other kinds of visual arts or even prose, it's not as distilled into that thing, right? And I think that's why, mm-hmm. You see, like, there's a joke in the cartoon TV series Home Movies where Brendan Small wants to learn to play guitar, and the mom says, why do you have to learn how to play guitar? And he's like, because I'm a kid from the suburbs.
Exactly. And yeah, so you had this very worshipped skill, and many people who represented that.
And in the 50s, when the Zorro TV show was really, really huge, the Disney Zorro TV show, there was all these kids taking fencing classes, right?
Sure.
You know, I when I was taking martial arts classes back when I was in my 20s, I remember getting really excited when they said, next week we're going to do sword play. First thing I thought of was Jedi, you know, Star Wars. I'm going to get to do lightsaber fighting with these safe wooden sticks. Pretty cool. You know, so yeah. I mean, that there's nothing unusual about this. So it sounds like you're kind of like bringing in this idea of influences as well as role models, kind of bundling them all up.
Yes, absolutely, playing with that. And because I think there's probably a spectrum that builds up to role model. So if you start peeling away and exploring someone's path to mastering a thing you admire, mm-hmm. and then start really, really respecting the person. Mm-hmm. And then perhaps they occupy a bigger influence beyond just a plain influence, right? So an influence would be, I guess, someone that provides you an example and ways to achieve improving at a skill, mm-hmm. where I guess the role model would then be going beyond the skill. This is how I'm just exploring and framing it up.
Yeah.
And I mean, you took some notes.
Well, I wrote some very stupid category type stuff to try, and it was more or less to try to like wrap my brain around the idea. And so I was thinking, okay, like a role model to me is someone who their whole life is sort of a test case of what you want your life to be like, right? Mm. Whether it's like the work, it's the ethic, it's the attitude, it's everything. And it all can be encapsulated. I want my life to be like that life in some way, in some vague way, right? Not exactly. I don't want, like, I really, really admire Jack Kirby and as an artist and as a person when I read his biographies. But I don't want to live the exact life Jack Kirby led, right? I just want to live a life that is in the similar spirit of that. So it refers to longer term goals. And then I broke it down into, okay, well, what about people who I admire, who I think of them in the kind of day-to-day stuff when I'm dealing with the nitty-gritty stuff, the stuff we forget about 5 years later. And I thought, well, those are people I just admire. They're not role models as much, I don't think. They're people who I admire for very specific kind of like handling on the ground situations. Go ahead.
So do you have anything from recent years that someone who, and I guess there's the other factor is it's a really personal definition of what role model is. It's because you could have high esteem for someone and a lot of aspects of how they go about doing what they do and living the way they live.
Absolutely.
To the extent that you can know them when you're not probably, which they could be either no longer living or they could be perhaps far outside your circle of, you know, friends and family.
Absolutely, right.
In like, which you probably people, don't actually know them.
There are people that I have great esteem for who I personally would never want to be at a dinner party with, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, these are people who, like, they don't live, they don't represent the values that are what I would consider to be in my tribe, but for what they are, boy, they're so good at what they are. You know, I don't want to be that, but they're a really, really rock solid human being. They just, you know, are outside of my comfort zone, I guess. I don't know what the word is for that. And yeah, and you're right. Not to turn this into any kind of like qualification or
disclaimers.
No disclaimers. But I'm just saying that these words I'm throwing around right now are provisional words. Mm-hmm. This was my way of coping with this idea of what is a role model to me. So, yeah, it's like I think of when I start talking about admiration, I think of, you know, I've talked a lot of times about my teaching friend Mary Jo, who really is somebody I think about a lot in how she handled people and how she dealt with very difficult people and difficult situations, and even how she could have a conversation with you. And this is something where I have not achieved this yet. She never made it about her. She could cite examples from her life, but it never turned into talking about her. It always turns into talking about you when she's talking to you, which, I mean, let's face it, that makes people feel pretty good. And I don't know if she was doing that intentionally or not, but it was an amazing thing to watch how she could just keep people really engaged with her in that way. And it's got to be her teaching training, I'm thinking, is part of it. But also, I think just because she's a really, really good person. Now, role model? That's a tough one because I don't want to live the life that she's leading. I mean, she's a full-on professor of education. I don't want to do that. I want to be a cartoonist teacher, right? I want to stick to walking both sides of the road on that.
But at the same time, so role model, it sounds like to you, is a very, it's not very granular. It's sort of a holistic, complete package.
It's very, but at the same time, it's very general to me. Mm. It's referring in like a broader sense of vocation, ethos, approach, and general disposition. Right. Whereas a person that I admire, they can be from any vocation and they can have lots of different kinds of dispositions. Like there are people who I admire who are very aggressive, and I love the way that they can snap into, I don't want to say an angry, but they can be aggressive when they need to be, when the situation merits it, and they know how to detect when aggression is the necessary approach to the situation in order to resolve it, right? Mm-hmm. They're not aggressive for the sake of it. They're not aggressive just to be mean, but when they can detect where, well, the only way that this is going to be resolved is if I get a little bit aggressive about this, or assertive, perhaps I should say assertive. As a guy who struggles with detecting when is the right time to assert myself, right?
Is that another trigger for identifying a role model for you? Is it when there's something that you are working toward or see as a strength that they have that you would consider maybe that might be a good strength to also have? Or
I would suppose that probably all of my thoughts on this are going to be informed by the fact that, yes, I see myself as a person who is continuously striving. Mm-hmm. And any equipment that I put in my rucksack to deal with this living thing is going to probably have to assist me in some way with those striving things. Mm. Did I say words?
No, you did. So essentially it's not necessarily about feeling inadequate and seeing someone that is highly adequate or extremely effective. It's more, it's a different framing of how do you look at improving and stretching.
But don't get me wrong. I feel plenty inadequate. I have my share of feelings of inadequacy, as all humans do. It's one of the things about being a biological creature a mammalian biological creature, right? Mm. So anyway, but I want to talk about yours. I mean, we've been talking about me too much. What about your definitions or examples of how you think about this kind of thing?
Yeah, well, I can't help but get it into the realm of it's like a squishy continuum or something between just recognizing a good idea all the way up to having a fair amount of affection for this person, whether or not I know them really. my idea of that person. One example would be like Bruce Dickinson, lead singer of Iron Maiden, right? Okay. I have never met the man. I was actually kind of close to almost meeting him because I waited for him outside the, the First Avenue venue in Minneapolis in the early 90s. I think it was 93, and it was for the Tattooed Millionaire Tour. Mm. And
this has been around the time of when he did that cover of All the Young Dudes, yeah?
Exactly. That was that album. And it's just funny. So I was waiting outside First Avenue, and this not tall gentleman in a tracksuit all of a sudden walks by. And it was after he was a good few arm's length past me. Not that that matters. It's just a form of measure. And I thought, oh my God, that is actually Bruce Dickinson. And then, you know, the crowd calmly, you know, followed him. You know, there's like 10 of us there. So he had bodyguards and stuff. It's not like there was a creepiness thing or whatever, but it was sort of a, you know, hey, we would like your autograph or whatever. Thanks for the show and everything. And then he said, yeah, just give me a minute. He went into the bus and he sat down and cracked open a beer and, or something that looked a lot like that. And, then like an assistant, you know, said just a minute, shut the door and the bus drove away.
Oh man. It sucked.
Yep. So anyway, that's still at the same time, you know what? I still hold him in high esteem. It was actually, I mean, I had a lot of respect for him then, but I think I learned more about him as far as he seems like a very driven dude. And so of course I feel sort of a respect for that where.
And maybe, a kinship with that sort of that spirit, right?
Exactly. A kinship with that spirit. And I mean, yeah, anyway, someone who studied fencing very aggressively and I believe he, you know, trained to the Olympic level and he's written books, he's written plays, he flies a jet plane, he flies his band around the world. Wow. Like a freaking superhero, right? flies his band in a jet plane and then performs a rock concert. And then anyway, so yeah.
Get on the Eddie plane. We're going to go do a concert. Yeah.
He's not a passenger. It's not like I'm a rich man and you know, my man or my woman or whoever this person in my employment flies me. No, he flies the band.
Right. He's living life hands on.
Exactly. I mean, that says a lot. And you see him on stage anywhere and the intensity is skill and all that stuff. So anyway, I have a lot of respect for that. Don't know him, right?
Mm-hmm.
I totally don't know the man, but I really do respect his work and whatever kind of creative intensity can drive someone to learn all those different things and be effective at them.
Let me ask you this. I'm a guy who is historically has been very prone to hero worship. And to this day, there are certain things where I think speaking ill of certain things is just out of line. Like, you know, like people say to me like, well, oh, is this a sacred cow to you? And I say, well, if that's your word for it, yeah. I think it's in bad taste to cross certain lines on certain topics, but I know it's a personal thing. And I know that stems out of hero worship, which is, in my opinion, a dangerous thing because it kind of comes out of that lizard brain thing of submission to leadership, which, mm-hmm. you know, we've gone into this before about this whole idea about gurus. But I'm curious... you know, where am I trying to go with this? Is it the kind of thing where I'm trying to like, get it? Like you admire the guy, but like, I'm trying to ask. Like you recognize, and I'm sure you do, obviously, that he's still a human dude.
Oh, right? Sure, yeah, he's human,
right?
I wouldn't do anything he commanded me to do.
Right, right, or right. Like if he said, like you know. I don't know, like he, if he were to express an idea that you are diametrically opposed to.
If he was like, hey, comics suck, video games are poisoning the world and, right. you know, et cetera, then I'd be disappointed. But
would you be like pretty bummed out about that?
No, I'm on the spectrum of disappointment. I'd be, you know, a mildly annoyed disappointment saying, oh, that sucks. Oh, well, you know,
yeah. Like finding out like, oh, Einstein was a rotten husband. I don't know. If
exactly.
He was
I mean, they, yeah. And we've mentioned the H.P. Lovecraft one before.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's disappointing. I mean, it's I find it, you know, it's unfortunate. But is it some active, I don't know, stumbling block or source of pain? No, not really. I mean.
I guess that's why I have such a severe definition of what a role model is, because a role model to me has to be the whole package to where if one of my role models were to say is that, you know what, women aren't that great and we really should treat them as second class citizens. They can't be my role model anymore. They can't because they've expressed an idea that is in violation with everything else that I hold to be true about myself and what I interpreted them to be.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's a different extreme. So I guess it depends on what you mean by hold dear and whatnot. I mean, if it's really if someone who I have that kind of esteem for shows enough of a unhealthy attitude toward humanity and things I think are good and true or whatever, I Yeah, it would diminish my opinion of them. And if the more extreme that was, the more extreme I would, I guess, demote them as far as saying, well, I as far as tuning into your ideas, I've pretty much tuned them out now. Right.
Right. Right.
There's other richer, more healthy sources of information in the world that I will pay attention to.
But I mean, I think at that point that it would devolve into, well, I have a begrudging respect for this person. All other things notwithstanding, right? They were wrong. They're wrong about this one big thing, but you can't deny all these other nice things about them. Too bad.
That's a good classification. And I would look at that as being objective about it.
Maybe that's a good word to use. It's like, because as I was crunching on this idea, Rob, as I was thinking about, like, gosh, I don't really know who my role models are anymore. Mm. I haven't thought about this in a long time, which is weird because, as I pointed out earlier, as a kid, I grew up being hero worship was like a big part of my life. Although the more and more I think about it, the more I think that most of my hero worship revolved around fictional characters and not like real people. Either they stay somebody that I admire from a distance and I have a lot of respect for them and I have no intention of getting to know them, or they become somebody who I encircle into my life and then I get to know them and then I have affection for them, which kind of muddies the water of role model. I can't be friends with a role model because now I've discovered their humanness, right?
Right. Well, okay. So what about someone that you do know is very human, but is in the role of, I guess, a more hierarchical teacher relationship. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of a better example offhand other than martial arts, right? Mm-hmm. Where you just, by interacting with a martial arts instructor, you end up gaining a lot of respect for them in a, perhaps a very specific area. You may not enjoy their company out of class or what have you, but within a certain context, I want to say closer to that idea of what you said role model is in some ways where they're, what they express is, I guess it's given less scrutiny in a way. And this is my phrasing of it, where if they say, well, no, in this situation, you stand this way and you punch that way, you do it.
Yeah.
You don't go, well, maybe, and then boom, you're on the mat and there's your well, maybe.
And I might have to play the semantics card on this one, Rob, because when you use that example.
Oh, please. I'm sorry if I'm actually going to.
No.
Am I being pedantic?
No. No, because I think. Okay. What's tripping me up on this whole topic, and this is fun for me, actually. This is fun to actually try to wrap my brain around this live.
Sure.
I don't know how fun it is for the listeners, but hey, as long as we're having fun, right? but it's like, I think when you brought up the martial arts thing, it made me realize role model. They are the model for a role.
Role. Exactly. There you go. Yeah.
They are the model for a role that you are to play, which is a very Eastern idea, right? It's like, it's this idea of do as I do, son. And that in certain contexts, like in martial arts, it's a very healthy relationship. It's a good thing to have. And I think that's why it's tough for me to wrap my brain around this and go, well, who is that person for me? I guess I'll have to back off and be not so precise with my definitions and go more along the lines of what you were talking about, this kind of like fuzzy continuum, because it's a lot of different people in very, very, very specific instances. Like Dan Mishkin, who's a friend of mine, who I have just bags and bags and deep wells of respect for in very certain respects or certain ways. But then other ways, I can talk to him as an equal and I can give him a hard time. And in that context, it works. We're just buddies then. But then when we get to talk about certain things, right, the things where I kind of lean on him because he has more experience in that arena and I think in a general sense is a way more compassionate human being than I am, I defer to him in those arenas. So in that way, yes, he'd be more along the lines of somebody I admire, somebody who is more of a role model, somebody who does things, performs actions that make me go, gosh, I should be more like that.
You said an important word, I think.
Okay.
You said defer. So yeah. Deference, right?
Yeah.
And that's where you are willfully setting aside your will at that point. In some context, for some amount, that to me, that's what deference is, where this person is essentially the real sense of authority.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to suspend my judgment in this situation.
Okay.
No, I'm saying like I'm rephrasing what you just said. In my
exactly. Mind. Okay. Sorry. it sounded so matter of fact. I thought, oh, okay.
I'm agreeing with you begrudgingly, Rob. No, I wrote this down because I was thinking this as I was crunching on the ideas, like, does the concept of the role model distance us from being human or treating others like humans? And I think that what we just got through kind of answered that question. Is like, no, in a way, it's acknowledging someone else's strengths and submitting to it in the sense of the learner again, right?
Yeah.
Being the learner in the situation, you clear, and it's not a blind devotion. At least in my case, you know, it's like I'm listening to Dan. I'm gleaning what he's doing while he's doing it. It's not just, well, Dan's going to take care of this. I'm going to go ride a bike. I'm going to go out to the beach while Dan does this thing. You know, it's like I'm watching him the whole time too, because I want to know. I want to decode. I want to unbox what the heck he's doing there because it's so effective, right?
Exactly, because in a way, when someone demonstrates being so good at a certain thing or they're effective, and you have enough of a vocabulary in that space where you can decompose it or learn from them or follow whatever they're teaching to absorb it and make your own, I find that a pretty darn awesome relationship to run into now and then. At the very least.
Let's rope this back into art. Let's rope this back into visual storytelling. This is an old, old topic of discussion is mimicry, right? Mm. You're just a carbon copy of so-and-so, and you'll see that on DeviantArt or something like that, right?
Yep.
And hey, you know, look at my old stuff I did in the 90s for Antarctic Press. I was blatantly, ruthlessly ripping off Akira Toriyama because I didn't know what I was doing yet, and I found something in that guy's work that made me go ah, and so I couldn't pinpoint what it was because I wasn't a very good learner yet, and so I just said, well, I'll just copy it wholesale and hopefully some of it will trickle down, and some of it did, but I had to go through many, many pages of copying a guy before I figured out what it was specifically about his work that I liked, and as a result it was a bad copy. When I was starting out, right? It was a copy through my own personal lens. So it was like, you know, it's like anybody doing an impression, right? No matter how good you are at doing an impression, it's still going to sound a little bit like you. So I think this idea of identifying what it is that you admire and putting words to it helps you assimilate it. Better, at least the stuff that the specific thing you're trying to assimilate.
Exactly. Yeah, I find it's an intentional, reflective way of learning that you get to. You don't have to go this path of learning art on your own, and you know, beat your head against every single lesson that someone else has learned, and you know, run into, but somehow, whoops, that could never be transmitted. It actually can, and so it's possible to learn from what other people have accomplished before you and build off of it. And at the same time, there's that process of, well, it's outside of you, it's not you, it's not familiar, and then as you get familiar with it, and you, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but you clumsily find your way of connecting with those ideas until they, you know, they become your own, and it's... Yeah, I guess the other way to do it is when I was growing up, there was a dude I knew that was an awesome guitarist, and I'm not talking about myself. And
is this like when somebody says I'm asking for a friend?
Yeah, exactly.
There's this guy I know who's got a problem. His problem is awesomeness.
Exactly. He just can't stop being awesome. So. Anyway, he was very, very skilled. I mean, but at the same time, he had a way of essentially, he had a worship for Joe Satriani. And my word, that dude sounded exactly like Joe Satriani. And that is not a slough thing to shoot for. I mean, highly, highly skilled guitarist and trainer of many guitarists in that era, especially, I think. So, but at the same time, I actually, and I think it's my own, you know, whatever view of the world at the time, but it kind of scared me where I was like, well, is that what happens when you learn what other people do? And I actually have in music and guitar and it sounds dumb, but even to this day, I don't know a lot of other people's songs. I mean, I've mostly played my own music for, you know, most of my life now.
Wow.
Yeah.
For fear of being subsumed by somebody else's voice.
Losing my voice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I definitely, what's funny. So I'm looking at an app recently to help, not that an app fixes things or whatnot, but it is called, oh boy, it's escaping me. I have it in my notes and it's called Capo. It's for iOS and OS X. And the desktop version for OS X lets you slow down music, which a lot of apps let you do that. Right. So you could load a song in VLC and play it slower. Right. Mm-hmm. And VLC is free. But what this app does, it lets you do some transcription along with the waveform and it'll spit out tablature too. So you can, it's kind of a neat way to decompose and like really get into, but it's you're not picking up a tablature book. You're using your ears. You're using your understanding of, you know, these notes and these intervals and doing the transcription. And so I don't know, sounds like a fun way to do it, to approach. And anyway, that's along the lines of, you know, something I want to do to try to work through that old habit kind of thing. So I guess this doesn't have to do with a role model necessarily, but
well, I think we're kind of coming around the horn to talking about this idea of assimilating influences, I think the big idea there is, I mean, another way I want to go at this is I want to address some of the notes that you wrote down here that I think are really interesting. But this idea of unboxing is a key skill in assimilating an influence. Although, you know, I would also suspect that just blind mimicry will eventually trickle down something, right? Because at least in my own experience, it worked that way. Although, you know, I've known my share of learners or artists rather who they would crank out page after page after page with 0% improvement. They just kept sort of repeating the same things over and over again in their work. And I watched for years as their work didn't really show any kind of signs of, and this was when they were like young, and it's at that stage where most people in that age group were making huge leaps in their work, the ones who are putting in the time anyway.
Sure. So
I don't know. I mean, I can't guess every specific case, but I would say probably, you know, the general.
Well, I think there's a couple of paths for adapting that they don't have to be mutually exclusive. Mm. So you could be self-referential, or you could be referential to external ideas. So within your, as you went from page to page, panel to panel, I imagine you were observing your own wishes for improvement at the very least.
Oh, yeah. No, we just talked about this recently, I thought. I think when we were talking about that comic that I finished, I think we were doing like a little bit of wrap-up.
Oh, obviously that's a super recent example.
Yeah. But you got written down here on this list a series of attributes that I'm guessing are like attitudes that you would throw, or attributes you would throw on somebody that you would classify in the ballpark of role model dumb.
Right. Right.
And I got to wonder, here's the softball I'm going to throw at you. Maybe it'll be a curveball, but I'm guessing it's a softball. Is you have to really kind of have a pretty good sense, at least a fuzzy sense, of what your inner values are in order to be able to identify those things and know what you're responding to, right?
Sure. I mean, yeah, did you throw a ball?
I'm asking you to expand on this idea because you've got these attributes listed on here.
So what would it take? I look at this as, let's see. It would be, I think you could arrive at this from both the internal and the external, where you could be looking at something externally and just starting to ask yourself, well, why am I reacting to this? How come, is there a commonality among a bunch of things I'm reacting to? And then one way or the other, I think you could detect a pattern. And I think the more practiced you are at being intentional, without a doubt, you'll have an easier time unboxing it. That's a skill in and of itself, which I, oddly enough, who knows if I'll post this. I have this habit lately of recording Polytechnicasts and not posting them, which is fun. But
that's a whole nother discussion that we got to have.
Yeah. But I was thinking about the habit of artistic journaling and why would you do that? And I think it's about getting a grasp on the vocabulary, you know, that you have. And you find, why would you care about that? I would think one reason to know, to have a better sense for when you put in a certain effort, the kind of result you'll get. So you'll feel more effective instead of being surprised that why didn't this go the right way? Why isn't this? And it's just a matter of gaining familiarity with what you're thinking and why. And
I don't know why I can't lose weight, I say as I'm eating my fourth slice of pizza.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. It's this is in 100 other disciplines, right? Like people who work out, there's like 100 devices, more than 100 devices to track your progress. Right.
This is absolutely, let's see, it is a mental artistic workout.
Yeah.
It is very much what it is. It's the journaling, and then so is thinking about role models and thinking about, well, why are they important and what about them resonates? And then, I don't know.
This is the one area.
This would surprise anybody. I think people, anyone who actually listens to this podcast, I think they would just say, oh, okay, so what, to this list.
Well, okay. Well, I've got a fun way to think about this. Is I think this is the area where nerd fighting is actually kind of useful.
Oh.
Because when I say nerd fighting is like, who's better, Buffy or Angel, right?
Sounds like an underground betting sport.
First rule of nerd club. Yeah. No, but like the stupid battles people get into over which character is better than which character. Now,
yep.
I've participated in my share of these things in a friendly capacity with people who I trust who are just friends, and we know that there are no stakes to this battle. But the neat thing that comes out of it is it forces you to defend your position. And when you and this is language I use in my classrooms, is there's no right or wrong answer, but you have to defend your choice. You have to tell me why you are standing behind this idea. And if you can give me a reasonable argument, then I'm not going to fight you on that. I'm not that kind of teacher, right? So
you're asking me, is He-Man better than Goku? Is that what you're saying?
He-Man is better than Goku, and that is actually an objective truth, and I'll tell you why. Because He-Man is so good that even when he's fighting a huge monster that's threatening to destroy all of Eternia, he will not hit it with his hands. He will not strike it with a sword. He will find the peaceful solution. He will pick it up and he will throw it in the lake. He does not want to hurt living things. Even when he was fighting rock monsters who had a laser gun and they had his sword and they were ready to crash an entire cavern in on top of their heads, and Man-at-Arms says, now there's no other solution except to fight them. And He-Man says, I won't. These people don't know violence and I won't be the one to teach them. There's got to be another way. He-Man is objectively better than Goku.
Interesting. I think if encountering a similar situation, I do believe Goku would behave in a similar fashion. I think his choice to fight has more to do with the context. If there is anything selfish about Goku, it is his desire for improvement. But at the same time, he's absolutely in service of the whole universe. And perhaps... that's why Goku would have to show up and save those people who need the help.
So see, this is exactly what we just model, right? Is like this idea of getting into a stupid nerd fight like that has nobody cares. But except the people who are defending their choice, right?
Yeah.
It forces you to think really hard about why you're taking that position, right? When you're a kid, you're just doing blatant mimicry. Well, I'm going to act this way because the character I like on the show acts that way. And you don't know the reasons why, right? So like when I was in fifth grade and I decided, well, fighting is wrong because G.I. Joe told me so. And Lifeline, the character who I really like on that show, he represents this attitude that really communicates to me, but I don't know what it is about, so I'm just going to be like him. I didn't know why. I couldn't give you a justification for it. It's just I like him. He's cool, and I want to be like that. But then as you get older, then you can. This is why I like stories with big casts, because each character represents an option, a vector into a way to approach this whole living business, right? Not to say that to this day, I watch things like My Little Pony and go, I'm going to be more like that character, right? it's in perspective now. I'm a grown up, and you know, now it's entertainment, and I'm watching it through the lens of my 8-year-old self and enjoying it in that respect, but not using it as a model for life. Although My Little Pony, really well written show, but
well, some shows actually, I would argue, they insert characters that you will eventually identify with. So you may encounter the show at a certain stage of life, and a later stage of life, mm-hmm. you will have a perspective that lets you appreciate another character more.
True. Yeah. You have an example?
In Full Metal Alchemist, I haven't seen Brotherhood, and I don't know if I want to. That's a whole separate thing. But the first original series, whatever, I love it. And there was a character, he was the knife thrower. He did not have alchemic powers, but he was... Let's see. Oh, cannot remember his name. But he was married and he had a kid. And earlier on in the series, I was married or whatnot, but I didn't have a kid. And it was just interesting to see how he, the silly, in some ways stereotypical things that you'd experience in that situation that he demonstrated, and it was just sort of colorful. Context that showed who he was as a character that you wouldn't have to really gain much out of it, but you would if you had a similar experience. So anyway, right. And for the most part, it's just, he was just a goofy dad and whatnot. So,
well, yeah.
And it seemed like little comic relief, and it seemed like some reason, the reason for that comic relief, just wasn't as apparent to me before. And I'm not trying to say you get super special powers when you become a parent or whatever, or any kind of baloney like that.
No,
yeah, but that's a disclaimer. But so
no, I'm
clarifying. It's
no, your perspective changes, and I'm not a parent. I'm not a parent, so I don't have access to the super secret magic to which you are
age
referring.
Too. There's but characters age, that are different situation because of their age and different responsibilities and whatnot,
No, yeah. I'm watching the new Avatar Korra series, The Legend of Korra. Mm-hmm. And in it, there is a character named Tenzin, who is the surrogate father/teacher character for the main character, Korra. Korra is a teenager. She's going through that whole period where she wants to strike out and try out her powers, not the bending powers, but like her faculties and, you know, her abilities on the world. You know, that's what happens when you turn 17 or 18 years old. It's like, I want to go out there and I want to start changing things. And he's being the typical, or not typical, but he's being like what you would expect of a parental advisor kind of character. Be careful, be cautious. I'm trying to protect you from making too many really bad mistakes. And she's like, no, it's deck with you, Dad. I'm going to go do this thing. Oh, you were right, Dad. I shouldn't have done that. You know, that kind of thing. And he's constantly oscillating between this wanting to protect her and having to be the stern figure. Hey, knock that stuff off. Or learning a deep affection for her, where he's getting just as mad about the stuff as she's getting mad about, right? Now, when I was a kid, I'm watching this, and again, I've always got my eye on, like, how would my 8-year-old self interpret this versus how I am now? This is part of the analysis that I do whenever I'm watching something that makes me respond, because I want to know why it's making me respond. And as the 8-year-old me would look at that and go, like, oh, he's a cool dad. I wish I knew a guy like that who could help protect me, right, as a kid. Mm-hmm. As I'm watching it as an adult, I'm going, God, I identify with that guy. As a guy who teaches teenagers, he is quickly becoming one of my favorite characters because I am right there with you, Tenzin. I know what it's like dealing with a teenage girl who just will not listen to you. So, your perspective changes and you appreciate different things about a well-written story, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, it could be partly due to your job and life experience or anything. Let's see. And as far as role models, I think that's the general, the idea that links these topics, I think, is finding a connection with a real or fantasy character and trying to understand what that connection is. And if it goes to the realm of you also want to emulate, then there's some kind of role model or expert that you are being informed by or deferring to or whatever, depending on the extreme.
Okay, can I please, can I close with some devil's advocate kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Somebody out there, and I'm not saying of our listenership, I'm just saying somebody out in the world is going to respond with, you know, Rob, people are all inherently flawed and fictional characters aren't real. Are you not resigning your or casting aside your own power, your own efforts by submitting to a role model? We ourselves have often gone against this idea of the guru. Are you not diminishing yourself by saying, this person represents qualities that I admire and aspire to, and I'm going to you are identifying yourself. You're throwing away your identity by giving it to this person who quote unquote represents these ideals that you have. Be your own ideals, dude.
Well, let's see. That's a good stance to have this is backhanded, but essentially if you want to go indoctrinate a population and you don't want to adapt, right? I would say that seeking to somehow get better, I suppose your measure could be that you've convinced more people. That's one way to look at it. Well, I'm better at what I do because more people tell me I'm better at what I do or tell me what I want to hear when I ask that question or however you look at it. But willingness to consider other perspectives, I don't see any weakness in that.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't mean to make it sound like a sociopathy. Right?
No, I know. And I took it there. I took it there because I wanted to drop it on its head. I didn't. Yeah. Because that's some ideas I can be more playful with or whatever. But this one where the idea that if you can't combine your voice with others and you can't relate and you're somehow disconnected to the extent where considering other perspective and the thing is, out of fear, I would say, sure, I've occupied that position because I thought, well, if I learn if I learn too many guitar riffs and licks, which I learned at some, right? But like if I go too far, oops, there goes my voice. This is silly. It's so silly. But hey, I mean, anyway, learning's kind of funny. Some things can take a long time, but I like chewing on what you said, even though I was kind of I handled it in a non-gentle way.
You smashed the watermelon. No, it's funny that's a counter argument that I've received many, many times in my life. I mean, as somebody who spends a lot of time thinking about stories, I'll try to contextualize my own life experiences by going, well, I remember this from this story and this from that story, and this is kind of very similar to this, you know, and then I get the, hey, look, life isn't a story, dude. Grow up. right? Deal with this as a person and stop thinking about these fables and tales and bedtime stories and myths and comics. They're not going to help you. You're going to help you, dude. Be a grown-up and address these things like a grown-up, as if thinking about what other authors had to say about the stuff I was going through, right?
Yeah.
As if thinking about their point of view and learning from their experiences and their viewpoints would somehow diminished my own struggles in addressing the thing, right? And it comes back to that whole idea, like where I was trying to go with this whole final thought was, this is the person who says, you have to create a work of true originality, devoid of any influence. And if any influence shows, then, oh, you're a product of your time. You are not a classic, right? Because a classic, no influence will ultimately show in that, right? It's always a way to diminish one's work to say, oh, well, you were just doing that because this was happening at the time, right? Oh, the Persian Gulf War, the first Persian Gulf War was going on, and I could see that influence in your work. So what? I was experiencing that at the time, right? Or whatever thing was happening in your life at that time, right?
Yes. Yeah, so...
Sorry, Rob. I keep doing that to you. No, this is, I'm not making a qualification here. I'm just outright apologizing. I never summarize a point succinctly. I always give you 800 words.
Oh, no. This is less of, you know, like putting it like a tight end cap on the whole conversation. And it's more trying to have like a, I guess the rest of this podcast has been a staging dance and gear up scene to then embark on some kind of battle with these ideas, right? Where at the end, here we go. And then, the perspectives are, you know, understand, you know, have influences and understand them and then, you know, gain more abilities from them versus why would you want to be influenced and, you know, and that originality thing, that's an interesting thought. I think we probably should tackle that as a topic on its own because I think it's a fun one. I don't know if it's almost like link baiting practically, I think, to like depending on what we call it because, you know, it's just a divisive topic, but it fits in with this too because absolutely the original, those that march to the, somehow perfect originality,
right,
would sort of refute the whole premise of right. this episode.
Yeah, and I think it's funny. I'm glad we got to go here because you know something that I've beaten on heavily in the past is this whole submission to gurus idea and how I get really itchy about the idea of somebody calling themselves a guru and. The implicit suggestion of what that relationship becomes between guru and student.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I defer constantly to people who I have great admiration for and great respect for, right? Which is it's a sophisticated spectrum of between guru and, you know, the other end of the spectrum, right?
Exactly. And I think we achieved pulling off another, a complicated truth.
Damn, that should have been the name of the show. No stupid helpy tips this time, you know, and I'm glad of that. I'm glad we got to have we got a little bit of into some of the ick with this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And stupid helpy tips need to come back. I think they're fun. And,
If I were to have a stupid helpy tip, it would be the one that I use in all of my comics classes, which relates directly to this, is that the analytic eye, and I've talked about this many, many times, right, is that anytime anything makes me go, I have trained myself to say, why did it do that to me? Why did I react that way? And do my best to pick it apart. And if I can't pick it apart, I jot it down for later follow-up when I'm talking to some friend of mine. You know what was really bugging me? This thing that I was watching or this thing I was reading and this happened in it. I can't figure out why, but it made me feel hungry or it made me feel ennui or it made me feel a little excited, you know? And and you discuss it with a stupid nerd fight. So that would be it. That's all
I'm thinking. That is odd. Okay, so psych. Not only do we present a topic with like a really complicated, probably no answer answer, we pulled off a stupid helpy tip. I mean you. Thank you, Jersey.
Oh, we need music for it. For the stupid helpy tip.
Yeah.
Well, you're the musician between the two of us. Anyway, well, this was fun, Rob. I appreciate you once again knocking me out of my comfort zone and making me stand on one leg while you were throwing, you know, things at me. Just to try to get me to recite poetry while trying to balance on one leg while trying to dodge a thing. That was fun.
Exactly. Oh, hey, right back at you. Thanks. I love where you take these topics. All I said was role models.
Role models. You know, that's the funny thing. I mean, I hope this doesn't come across as like, you know, inside baseball stuff that nobody cares about. Hopefully this is like actually useful information, but that is like one of the most fun things in the world is when somebody throws out two words and, you know, the less specific, the better. And I got to try to make a topic out of that. You know, it's like when when I'm doing freelance comics, like the project that I finished not too long ago, where they said, okay, it has to be about friendship, or no, it has to be about teamwork, working, or spending time with your parents, and courage. Make a story out of that. Oh, wow, what a challenge, you know, and those limitations make me feel more excited about the project rather than do anything you want, you know. So.
Oh, gosh. I love it. Yeah, more and more. The limitations are pretty awesome. And anyway.
So that's what people could do if they want to help us, is if they want to give us some ideas for shows, things that they're interested in. Two words. leanintoart@gmail.com. Just send us two words. See what we can make out of it. That would be a fun challenge.
Yes.
And we are not allowed to go less than an hour on it. And we are not allowed to say, I don't know. We have to formulate some kind of coherent thought, some collection of words that amount to something.
Exactly. We demonstrate our intentionality. Yeah. It's the intentionality challenge.
Oh, writing that down. Take the intentionality challenge. I choose Coke.
Why do you choose?
Yeah, why? Because it's not as sweet as Pepsi, and it's a little bit more fizzy. I like the bubbles. Mm. There you go. All right. So, hey, everybody, thanks for participating in this thought experiment with us called leanintoart.com. We're going to be back with more video episodes soon. We just got to get through the next month with kidsreadcomics.org. And then we're also going to get back to doing classes again with Rob Launch's Underwater Tomato Ninja as a full-on course at leanintoart.com. So, there isn't anything left to promote except that, okay, well, I think this episode will be going live just before KRC, so I'm going to take this opportunity to say one more time, Ann Arbor, Michigan, kidsreadcomics.org. Rob and I are both going to be in Ann Arbor. You can come hang out with us. Rob, I just secured the venue for the after party. There's going to be an artist after party in downtown Ann Arbor. Yep.
Very nice.
And, it'll be Sunday night right after the show. So a quick walk from the downtown library to a local bar where we'll be able to get microbrewed beer and some wonderful artisanal foods, because it is Ann Arbor after all. Details to be announced soon, but I just confirmed that the room is secured for us.
Exciting. That rocks.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good weekend. It's gonna be an exhausting weekend, but it's gonna be good. So what kind of things are going to be at Kids Read Comics? Hands-on workshops for kids and adults. I mean, we got Krishna Sadasivam of Lean Into Art, who's going to lead one of his workshops there. Rob, you're going to be moderating a panel on video game design from the ground up with Brandon Dayton and company. Brandon Dayton, who led our workshop Foundations of Dynamic Line Work, which you can get at leanintoart.com/workshops. You're going to be doing your video game workshop. I'm going to be participating in a couple events. I'm going to be part of Dave Roman's Comics Quickfire on Saturday and Sunday, live drawing game show challenge. What else we got? I'm trying to think of all the, we've got like a webcomics panel.
And there's like what, 40 events? Did you say?
I just secured my 48th event for the
48.
48 events over the
course
of 2 days.
You could really keep busy. I mean, seriously, this is vacation worthy stuff. Like if you think about, this could be a very expensive conference someday, maybe. I don't know. like 48 of free events. And if not, there will be expensive conferences patterned after this, right?
You can take these words to the bank. As long as I am involved with Kids Read Comics, it will always be free to the public. Always. That is central to my philosophy about the show. And I know it is with the other co-organizers as well. I mean, I don't want
to. And that is awesome. I didn't mean to. Yeah, obviously this is, it's in service to literacy and to visual arts and storytelling and comics and I didn't mean to be crass about the money thing.
No,
there's a lot of value there. And I'm not just saying it because I'm doing a workshop or two, but
no, we just secured 501c3, I forget what, the nonprofit status. We are a nonprofit organization, and you can bet your buttons I am going to be putting a big, fat, bright orange donate to KRC button on the site as soon as we can. I'm going to be shameless in begging for money to keep our organization going.
Cool.
In order to keep it free to the public so that all it costs the participating artists and the participating attendees is travel expenses and hotel expenses. But nobody's going to have to pay admission to get into the show. Nobody's going to have to pay for tables to participate in the show. Mm. Go ahead.
By pointing out the money factor, it's sometimes people have a hard time valuing things that are free.
True.
Where, oh, it's free. It's not, there's not much at stake. What's at stake is an experience of 48 workshops that you could go to. I mean, some of them are scheduled at during the same time, right?
Yep.
But at the same time, like, you could go to a lot of great educational experiences.
And just plain fun ones. Chris Houghton, who does the covers for the Adventure Time comic books, he's doing a demonstration on how to draw Adventure Time characters, right? Light,
cool.
Fun, just pure fun drawing workshops. But then, yes, then there's like more intense ones. Janie Ho of ChickenGirlDesign.com is going to be doing an Adobe Illustrator demonstration, how to draw in Adobe Illustrator. And then Josh Elder of ReadingWithPictures.org is going to be doing two sessions, seminars on comics in the classroom, comics advocacy, and digital licensing of comics. And then Sunday morning, yeah, there's going to be a librarian, educator, artist mixer where Dave Carter of the University of Michigan is hosting an event at the Hatcher Grad Library, posted about it on kidsreadcomics.org, where cartoonists and librarians and educators can get together and meet up and talk about ways to better advocate the comics medium and possibly make some connections. So, yes, I do Skype visits at schools. Here's my card, right? That kind of thing. So, yeah, it's this really cool combination of really light and fun stuff, just pure joyous celebration of comics and deep nitty-gritty stuff of learning some really specific skills, adding to your tool belt and having a good time doing it. So, yeah, I feel pretty passionate about this event. It's one of my babies. And it's a lot of work, but I love doing it. So, hope you guys can come.
Definitely. That would be awesome. To see you guys there. And yeah, give a shout out if you see us at Kids Read Comics.
Rob's going to be in the artist alley, and you should go up to him and tell him how much you enjoy Lean Into Art. And loudly, so lots of other people can hear, so that all the other artists will be like, gosh, that guy must be some kind of famous dude. That'd be cool. And watch how uncomfortable Rob gets when you do that. That'll be the most fun of all.
I was already pulling my collar and scratching my neck.
All right, we got to wrap this up.
All right, enough.
But that's yes.
Silliness.
This was fun, Rob, and I'm looking forward to seeing you at KRC, looking forward to doing another show with you next week.
Awesome.
So until next time, everybody, I have been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on the Twitters.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user LeanIntoArt, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.